From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us as we move further into the fall season. Of course, October is Respect Life Month, and we respect life every month, but especially in October, a lot of respect life, pro-life things going on. And here to tell us all about it is Moises de Leon. I'm noting your middle name there, Roberto.
Yes.
That's what my mother called me, because my proper name was Robert. And when she called me Roberto, I was in trouble. It's funny how parents have nicknames for you.
They do. And the fact that usually at home they use my middle name, because my dad's Moises too. Uh-huh. So to avoid confusion, they always call me by my middle name.
Yeah. Oh, good. I keep my middle name quiet till I found out how important this person was. My middle name's Jerome.
Oh.
And then I heard about Saint Jerome, and I went, boy, I hope I'm named after him. I'm not sure I want to live in a cave, but, you know.
That's true.
Well, Moises, good to have you, as always.
Thank you, Bob.
Respect life is so important, and it's a tough job these days.
It is, and it's bigger than most people know. The whole concept of respect life, it's from womb to tomb. So it's a huge area. I know
it's
that
not just about abortion.
It's not just about abortion. I know this month there's a whole bunch of campaigns that we'll see. I know that one of the ones that we focus on is usually abortion, but we have domestic abuse. I know Catholic Charities does a huge campaign on that that we support and everything. When it comes to the healing aspect of the miscarriage of children or abortion unborn, we usually have a mass. Mm-hmm. I know this year it got pushed a little bit later because of bishop's schedule, but it's a huge thing going on in the month of October. Right now, politically, we have the border situation down south. So mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch of immigration stuff that comes in with Respect Life, trying to be in solidarity with our brothers abroad and here locally. So it's a huge spectrum that we try to cover. I know here in the diocese, it's only a one-man job, so it's hard to cover all these areas. But we try to focus on stuff that we know that we can make a little bit of a difference and try to get as many people as involved. And hopefully later on we could expand the ministry to cover other areas of Respect Life as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you really think about the term Respect Life, It involves, as we say, womb to tomb, and we do. We think a lot about the unborn. We think a lot about end of life decisions. The so many states now, including California, with assisted suicide, on and on. And sometimes I think we forget that whole big area in between those two ends, beginnings and ends. Feeding the hungry, like you say, respecting all those people along the border, who are so many of them so desperate. That's part of Respect Life. And I'm not making a political statement here, but you know, they are children of God too, and deserving of our attention and our concern.
That's right, Bob. And the fact that it's, I know one of the things I'm trying to do is update the website with all these topics that fall under Respect Life. And if any of our listeners is interested in one of those topics or themes, just give me a call, because what I'm trying to do is hopefully in 5 years or 10 years from now, we're able to have each of those ministries grow and actually provide services and resources to those parishes that want to work on that particular aspect of Respect Life.
So is Respect Life, is it on a parish-by-parish basis primarily or not?
Well, it's based on, it's parish by parish. So depending on the parish, sometimes they have a Respect Life group or social justice committee. Both of them kind of overlap. Mm-hmm. I know most of the Respect Life ministries focus more on abortion or the Walk for Life, right. Usually the Gaber Project.
Right.
The social justice committees that I know of usually do the Walk for Life. They do a little bit more advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And pastoral care locally, so either right. volunteering at a food bank or right. providing resources to people in need.
Exactly.
So it depends on the parish, depends also on the group. Some groups are pretty strong, depending on the area they're ministering and they're providing. I know up north it's a little bit difficult to get people involved in Respect Life issues, because there's not too many Catholics up north.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, it depends on the area as well.
The Gaber Project, there's been a change in that, in terms of sort of, I guess, at the administrative level. It was a volunteer organization that has sort of come under the auspices of the diocese. It was certainly founded by Catholics, and anybody's welcome to participate, obviously, but the diocese, I don't like the term has taken it over, because that has a connotation that's not what it's about, but it's sort of under the wing of the diocese now.
Yes, and that's something that we took on, or it went under our wing July 1st, and I know a couple weeks ago we sent out letters to the pastors for those who already have the Gaber Project, trying to provide better resources, mm-hmm. maybe help them with their funding or fundraisers. We've sent out brochures as well to the pastors. So for those who don't have a Gaber Project, we're encouraging them to actually add that on uh-huh. to the Respect Life ministries. I know many times there's certain parishes that kind of want to divide those two ministries, just because it might be too much,
right.
depending on the need, how many clients there is in the area. And it's something that we're encouraging, because part of the bishop's four-part plan when it comes to the Respect Life is the pastoral care aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the USCCB last year had the campaign for Mothers in Need.
Right,
so
right.
part of the Gaber Project fits those two categories.
Absolutely.
Providing the needs that the mother is going through during her pregnancy, and actually accompanying her in that process. So we're trying to provide that. There's already enough of the advocacy going on that we've been good at. We're trying to create more of the pastoral care aspect to it and add that to the ministry of the Respect Life.
I've had the great good fortune to interview a number of people over the years, and most recently about the Gabriel Project. And boy, what a dedicated group of volunteers, number one, and what great work they're doing out there in the Lord's vineyard.
Yeah, and the fact that sometimes they do something so simple as accompanying them to their doctor's appointments,
exactly.
or even a baby shower.
Yeah,
sometimes
oh, yeah.
they don't even ask for it, but they do it anyways. And the fact that many of them don't even have families here, it just provides a great opportunity to feel like they're part of this family.
I remember the first time my wife was pregnant, and somebody called up. I don't even think it was a family member, it was a friend, and said, "We want to throw a baby shower for you." You know, and she was just stunned. She didn't know, you know, I mean, I'm sure somewhere in her life she had gone to a baby shower and knew that people did those things, but it didn't even, wasn't, she was so excited about being pregnant, and we both were, of course, and she said, "Oh, so-and-so wants to throw a baby shower," you know, and it's part of the celebration of life, you know, and celebrating this great news. I mean, when you get the news, you're calling mom and dad, and you're calling brothers and sisters and best friends and all that, then it hits you that there are people, sometimes it's a quote-unquote crisis pregnancy. I don't like that term because it sounds so negative.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they're not getting the thrill of this. They're afraid to tell their mom and dad. They're afraid, how am I going to have this baby? I can't afford this baby. On and on and on. And there was a group in the diocese. Again, it wasn't a diocesan program, and it was called Showers on Wheels or something like that.
Yeah,
and
I heard that before.
A couple that, and their daughter who would put this on, and it was, I'd go to their potlucks sometimes, and it was just so beautiful to see. They'd give them presents and car seats. I mean, new car seats. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an expensive item. And somebody up in Auburn had decided to just, if however many come and however many need them, we'll provide them. you know, and that kind of thing. And that's the kind of thing the Gabriel Project does.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the things that we're trying to expand. I know currently we have roughly around 30 in our diocese, and I know we have 103 parishes roughly.
Right.
So we're trying to expand at least to 20 more parishes to take this on. I know our coordinator, Andrea, is reaching out to pastors hopefully in the next week or so to see if they're willing to host this or listen to what the project is and be willing to add that on.
And for the moms out there that might want to avail themselves, if it's a parish that's near where they are, sometimes it doesn't have to be all 103. It can,
oh, yeah.
You know, that helps very, very much if you can get them in strategic locations.
That's true, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's great stuff. Great
stuff. Thank you. Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the upcoming respect life gatherings.
So what we're doing is, I know usually in the past we've had one big Respect Life annual gathering. And this time around, just because of what's happening with COVID and the pandemic and everything, we really wanted to take more of a step back and evaluate how we're doing as a diocese. So we're hosting Respect Life gatherings in different areas. So on Thursday, October 14th, we're going to be at Holy Spirit in Woodland from 6:30. Holy Rosary, sorry. Holy Rosary.
Holy Spirit's there, though.
Yes. Holy Rosary in Woodland from 6:30 to 8:30. And then Friday, October 22nd, we're going to be at St. Joseph in Auburn. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get a Saturday, October 23rd, in Chico, in the Chico area, but we haven't confirmed which parish is willing to provide a space. But part of the gatherings is just to see where the Respect Life movements are, how we could better support them during this time of transition, and see what new plans Bishop has for this following up year, which include advocacy, creating teams in the Respect Life side. I know we have deacon teams already established, which are creating long-term relationships, and also trying to push the Gaber Project. That's one of the ministries for those Respect Life leaders that don't have it in their parishes to add it on. And then thirdly, it's to try to create a network between them, the Respect Life members, in order for them to share best practices. So we're trying to create a long-term relationship in order for them to connect with each other. I know COVID kind of disconnected all of us all of a sudden. So we really want to establish a network in order for them to connect with each other in case there's another shutdown or anything down the road. They're able to stay with each other and be able to help each other during this time.
So, for instance, the meeting at Holy Rosary in Woodland on Thursday, October 14, 6:30, 8:30, you're hoping people might come from Davis or Winters or Knights Landing or West
Fairfield.
Sacramento or
yes.
Fairfield or Vacaville or any of the Dixon, any of those places, but not just people from Holy Rosary.
Yes, yes. So that's what we're doing. Auburn area, it's more of the Sacramento area, Roseville area. But if anyone wants to come to the Woodland or wants to attend all of them, they're welcome to.
Sure.
All we ask is just let us know, because we are providing a light dinner on this gathering, just to know exactly how much food we should get.
Did you hear that, dinner? You should have said that first, Moises. And there's one thing about being Catholic. You never turn down a free meal. Yeah. Some of my most enjoyable meals have been at a Catholic event, whether it was growing up and the parish festival when I was a little kid. You know, it was actually right about now. It was the second Sunday in October. We had the parish barbecue, and the whole town. There was very few Catholics in the town I grew up in. The whole town would turn out, you know, for the St. James barbecue, you know, and it was. And then, you know, all the events that the diocese has, you know, the St. Vincent de Paul dinners and the vocations dinner and Bishop Gallegos, those are such enjoyable events. And the food's always good.
It's always good.
It's always good. So that's good. Okay, Thursday the 14th at Holy Rosary in Woodland. Friday the 22nd of October at St. Joseph's up in Auburn. And then Saturday the 23rd, and we'll keep you posted on that, to be arranged at a parish, hopefully in Chico, or the Chico area at least.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good. And they can call you at 916-733-0133 or send you an email at mdeleon, that's M-D-E-L-E-O-N, at scd.org. No Roberto in there.
No.
Oh. Very good. Very good. What else do we have going on? A lot.
I know we're it's not October. It's more of November, but we're trying to promote this already. We're trying to promote our Rachel's Vineyard retreat. We're having a Spanish retreat coming up in November, November 19th through 21st. Mm-hmm. And we're asking anyone who has gone through an abortion or a miscarriage, if they're interested in some kind of healing or they want to talk to someone. And they want something, a space in order for them to have that dialogue. We host retreats, usually two in English, one in Spanish throughout the year. And we're starting those up soon. I would suggest contacting our coordinator, which is Aliza. And she'll be able to provide you those dates and information about how to register for that retreat.
So the Spanish will be November 19, 21, and then English next winter. Well, this coming February 4th through the 6th, and then in August next summer, the 12th to the 14th, also in English. The phone number there is 916-733-0161. And over the years, again, I've interviewed many people that have participated in Rachel's Vineyard, and especially the weekend, and universally have said how much it helped them. I remember talking to a couple. They went as a couple, and just tremendous healing that they felt, because it's one of those things that I think it really is difficult for people to get over. You hear this all the time. I can't forgive myself. I've heard that many, many, many times, and this is a step towards healing.
And it's open not only to the women, but to the fathers, or even to the moms or dads, and or anyone who had participated in an abortion,
right,
too.
Right.
So it's more than just the woman as well.
And you can learn more about it too at Project Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, at Project Rachel at scd.org. Everything will be at scd.org. That's just remember Sacramento Catholic Diocese. And we also in November?
In November, we also have our Memorial Mass for the unborn. So and for all those who have been aborted or miscarried, we're going to have a Mass with Bishop Soto on Saturday, November 20th at 6 p.m. at St. Mary's Cemetery in their chapel. And this is a great opportunity just to take time. I know in the month of November, it's usually dedicated to our loved ones who have passed away. So we're taking this time to remember our unborn. And it's a great way to just offer them a Mass and provide a sacramental Eucharistic healing for the family. And it's a way of remembering them every year. So anyone who's interested, you could just visit our website or you could just call my office. There is no need to register. You could just show up. But we do ask everyone to arrive a few minutes early just to make sure that there is no distractions during Mass, because I know the chapel's quite small, so we're asking everyone to arrive a little bit on time so we know exactly how many chairs to put out outside,
right,
in case it gets full.
And that will be 6 p.m. on Saturday, November the 20th, the Saturday right before Thanksgiving, at St. Mary's Cemetery and Funeral Center, 6509 Fruit Ridge Road, right here in Sacramento. Their phone number, the Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, is at 916-452-4831. And you know, this flyer we're looking at, Moises, has that one quote. It's one quote that has stuck with me ever since I first heard it. It's from Jeremiah. And people that say, well, abortion is kind of a modern-day problem. They didn't talk much about it in the Bible and on and on and on. And it doesn't specifically mention abortion, but what it does say is, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Those are profound words that go right to the heart. God is saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Wow. That's more than a bunch of cells.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a That's all I need. It's all I need right there. There's no arguing with that. It's straight from Scripture. Very good. And do you have other things you'd like to tell us about, Moises?
Well, we are working on another initiative on the miscarriage ministry.
Uh-huh. Which I think is something that has been greatly overlooked, not necessarily by the church, but by society as a whole. A lot of people really suffer in silence, and people don't realize what the mom and hopefully the dad also. I mean, I think it's obviously more real for the mother, but people kind of, well, it's my wife had a miscarriage, and first thing the doctor said, well, you already have a bunch of kids. It's wasn't meant to be, you know, but there was no sense of empathy there, that this obviously was a child.
And that's one of the things that during the pandemic, many of those concerns have come up, and we're working on with the Respect Life committees or parish teams to create a little miniature retreat and mass for them to have a time to recognize that was a child. Mm-hmm. Many times it's hard to provide that space or to be in that environment. And this is a place where we're trying to connect with mothers, having them actually name their child. It's a huge way of healing, and it's or even dialoguing with other moms or parents or fathers that have gone through this process, that it's different. And the fact that, like you said, many doctors don't recognize it as something. Sometimes they just shrug over. Yeah. I've heard so many stories that they just treat it as, oh, it was nothing. Go try again. And it's not. So having that space, we're trying to create something in October 29th and something in November 6th in the cathedral. I don't have the flyers yet. I'm working on those. But we're trying to reach out to both the English and the Spanish community. So it would be bilingual event and everything. But it's something that I'm trying to work on this year. It's going really slow. And hopefully next year we'll have something solid as well.
Very good. I think that's going to be a real important ministry. And I have to ask you about your necktie.
Oh,
it was a beautiful necktie.
Yes, it was given to me on my birthday last year.
Describe it for the listeners.
So it's some crosses, but around the crosses, it's kind of like a flower chain. And it's a dark navy blue, and the border, it's kind of silver.
It's a very Catholic tie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit it's a little bit subtle. You know, you just kind of, oh, it's a nice blue necktie, and they go, oh, those are beautiful crosses on that tie. I've never seen a tie like that.
I tried to bring as many Christian ties to the work environment.
Very good.
I have another one that's the Our Father, but you barely see the prayer on the tie.
The whole prayer's on there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. You're a subtle master there. That's great.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, Moises, appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
And, oh, thank you.
Look forward to seeing you. Good. Thanks for all your work. Some really wonderful stuff coming on. And come back and let us know more about all these things, and especially when you get a date, actually a site wrapped up in the Chico area.
I will.
Life meetings.
I'll keep you posted.
Thanks so much. God bless you and your family.
Thank you, Bob.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items.
Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Julie Sly, editor of Atlet Herald Magazine, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome back. Thank you, Julie, for all you do with our wonderful Catholic Herald Magazine. Well, we are just pleased and honored to welcome back our good friend Jim McCormick, the president of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra, a man who has been, he's not MIA, but we don't get to see him due to COVID. We've been doing these things virtually or on an old-fashioned thing called the telephone.
I know, how old-fashioned. No, Bob, the Canadian Mounties did not come down and pick me up, okay?
Yes, right.
It's good to hear your voice, Bob.
Good to hear your voice too, Jim. I know it's been a bit of a rough, 18 months now, something like that.
Yeah.
And it seems to be a little bit never ending. But we get good news, and then boom, it's back again. And
good for you. Hurry up and wait. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but it's been a bit of a soul searching time, hasn't it, Bob?
It has, and I. Maybe that's what the good Lord intended.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, people's lives have changed quite a bit, but we're hanging in there. I'm proud to say, and I'm speaking to you from Sacred Heart Church at the moment.
Very good.
We have a rehearsal coming at 7 o'clock with Schola Cantorum, and I'm a bit early, but I want to make sure that you and I have a chance to visit.
Well, you know, the choirs are so important. In music, in the church, of course, but just in society in general. I mean, it lifts the heart, you know, it soothes the soul.
That whole civic engagement, the connection that a person feels when he or she sings, either alone or with certainly a large team, a large choir, you know, and we're all being patient and we're staying as healthy as we can. And we are counting to 10 a lot, but we're determined to outlast this and be together when we know that it's safe to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about choirs at Sacred Heart, which probably is going to be similar to choirs throughout the diocese.
I think so. About a month ago, we received the green light to be able to rehearse. Knowing that people were vaccinated at the rehearsal or had a recent COVID test. So we've been singing for pretty well a month now at Sacred Heart with Schola and with the Vox Nova, the men's choir that does the 9:30 a.m. Mass. And when we sing on Sundays, we still wear our masks.
While you sing?
Yeah, absolutely. And it does affect, yes, it does affect the sound a bit. But, much to our surprise, it's not that muffled.
It's really interesting. I was was watching. It was some sporting event. It was televised, and they went up to the booth. They don't usually just see the action on the field, and you hear a voice, and then sometimes they'll go back to the booth and show you the announcers talking to each other, and they were both wearing masks. And I thought, wow, I would have thought, you know, for this, you know, they would take the masks off. And I honestly didn't know it. I mean, I wasn't going, boy, there's something wrong with this broadcast, you know, until I saw them. I went, well, they're wearing their masks. Yeah. And I've actually emceed a few events with my mask on. And yeah. People in the audience told me I looked better with a mask on anyway. So
can you make a larger mask, please? It's interesting because, you know, the lecterns, when people read the gospel and the different readings at that church, they can temporarily take their mask off because they're that far away from
sure.
the congregation.
Sure.
But singing, as you know, is the challenging thing because of the aerosols and droplets.
Right.
We insist on full vaccination and COVID tests, and everyone is really cooperative. That's how much we miss each other. We want to make music, Bob. And it feels, I got to tell you, it feels good. You know, most of us are over the heavy worry syndrome in that we know we're playing by the rules as much as possible. And the music that we create is for the greater glory of God, you know?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because, as you well remember, one of the very first outbreaks of COVID was in Washington State at a choir practice, not a Catholic, a Lutheran church, I believe, up in Mount Vernon, Washington. Beautiful little town. And
March 2019, and so, you know, we're the art form that is probably the most challenged, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now the speaker series in Sacramento is opening up, and I think, well, good for them. They have one person on stage talking.
Right.
You know, the ballet can dance and hopefully not share too many aerosols. Orchestra members, they can play, except for the darn winds and brasses.
Right.
They have to not wear a mask, so they have to be tested hours before they go on stage.
Right.
But the large chorus, especially Choral Society, it's just too risky at the moment because mm-hmm. there are too many setbacks, Bob. The variants, of course, have us spooked a bit. Then we have this thing called Thanksgiving coming.
Right.
You know, when people want to socialize, they can't help it. God bless them. So we're proceeding with caution. So Scola is at least rehearsing and singing. We'll know pretty soon. Scola wanted to have a couple of Christmas concerts in December.
Right.
And it's not official yet, Bob, but we're looking at December 18th at 8 o'clock at Sacred Heart.
Is this for Heaven on High?
That's correct. That's that same concert.
Right.
We missed it now for a year or two. And we don't officially know if it's going to take place, but we'll know soon.
Mm-hmm.
So people could check our website at some point, scolacantorum.com. They could find out. But even then, there's heavy COVID restrictions.
Sure.
They must bring proof of, you know, their ID, proof of vaccine or the latest, you know, COVID test. Minimal contact. We won't process. We won't sing around the audience, you know. So
right.
Some of the magic we have to work hard to keep, Bob.
But that's such a highlight of the Christmas season.
Oh, no. But once the darkness, you turn the lights up, Bob,
right.
And you intone the Gregorian chant, you light the candles, you process to once in Royal David City, then we know that Christmas is really on its way.
Right.
And so we're doing our best. So right now, Bob, just so you know, the Choral Society, the board of directors voted, recommended that we not gather the Choral Society for December.
For the Christmas concert.
Yeah, that's right. We don't dare. The numbers are too big, Bob. There's like 160 plus. We would have a children's chorus,
yeah.
A soloist, and then we would be at Memorial Auditorium. Anyway, we voted to officially cancel rehearsals and no concert in December.
Well, that's very disappointing, but I completely understand. I know in my hometown of Davis, one of the big events of the Christmas season was the children's Nutcracker, where any kid out of diapers could get a part, you know. And, and I think, I mean, literally 400 or 500 kids would participate every year, you know, and they would have multiple performances. And I had kids in it, and then I had grandkids in it, and then I had teenagers who would be assisting, you know, as backstage people, you know. And so it's something that touches almost every family in town. And for the second year in a row, they just announced that they just couldn't do it, you know.
I'm afraid so. It's hard because you see other groups doing things.
Right.
It's the art form and the proximity and the numbers, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's painful, but I think it shows when we did a survey of our choral society members, the comments, Bob, were just golden. It just shows how much these people care about each other. And the organization and our community. So while we're sad, we also know that at this time it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line, you know. Is we've seen it and heard it so many times. This too will shall fade away, and it will. And we will enjoy so much more when it comes back.
I know that's the whole thing. Like with the Choral Society, you remember the magic starting singing around the audience in the balcony and then processing down and having an audience sing along. All of that would not be allowed, you know. So you lose some of the initial magic. Yes, it's nice to be together to sing, but we would be concerned that everyone would be so worried that the joy would not be in Mudville at all.
Oh, that's exactly right. And I've seen Casey at this event, Casey at the Bat.
Oh, yeah.
And Santa Claus.
We were going to have puppets again this year for the Choral Society, and we asked the puppeteers if they would put masks on the puppets, and they agreed.
Well, you know, it looks like the Grinch finally won. You know, because is the Grinch going to say, I got it canceled, finally?
Yeah, well, he needs to know that it's just temporary, so we'll come after him. But no, so we'll know pretty soon if Skoll is able to move ahead. But I definitely can tell you what we're hoping, Bob, in March. 2 years ago in March, we were to have this amazing Verdi Requiem. Okay?
Right.
And 2 years later in March 2022, we still hope to have that concert. So we're hoping that in the next 4 to 5 months, with improved vaccination rates and the caseload of people dying of COVID lowering, it would be our debut, Bob, at the new Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center. We want to dedicate it to the victims of COVID and their families. And we're still going to also honor Biba Caggiano, the great restaurateur who passed away. So it would be fitting to have an amazing Verdi Requiem performance as our debut concert in the new Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center.
Describe the new and what has changed there,
besides
the name, obviously.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, instead of a sort of a concrete barn, the building now looks out onto the world in that there's all kinds of glass. So when you're on the L Street side, that whole side now is pretty well all glass, and it invites the Capitol Park into the actual Performing Arts Center. So you see all this green when you look out. And the Donors Lounge is just simply amazing. There's some really snazzy artwork there. The main lobby, it's got a lot more space to it. The HVAC system is hospital quality. And we'll know in a few weeks if the acoustics have improved, because everything else, they put in, you know how we had continental seating, Bob?
Right.
66 seats across. Are you kidding? You know? So we've now got two rows heading towards the stage and then two rows horizontally. So we lost 200 seats on the main floor. And that's a good thing, because there were 1,200 seats there, and we now have about 1,000. But you now have aisles that make you feel a lot safer when you're in the building.
Very good.
So there's that beautifully newly designed pit for the orchestra, and the exterior is really classy. There's an outdoor stage now on the K Street side, and in general, it's more cheerful. much more cheerful because of the glass and bringing Mother Nature inside the building. I think you'll be really impressed. We got the tour yesterday, a personal tour, and we were really knocked out.
The capacity, has it changed? You mentioned the seats on the main floor.
Instead of 2,300, it's about 2,100 now.
So those couple hundred seats, yeah.
A couple hundred, yeah, exactly. And the seats are from Bogota, Colombia. Beautiful colors, you know. And I forget the type of wood, but it's really acoustic friendly, you know. And they have electroacoustics now in the building. And so they're going to be able to temper it to like a chamber orchestra versus a piano recital versus an a cappella chorus. Like they can dial it up with dampers and things that they do, you know. So I'm really curious. We're doing a sound check there on November 14th with excerpts from the Mozart Requiem. It will be a closed rehearsal. And the acousticians from Phoenix, Arizona, will be with us. And so Scola will be on stage for a short while to do a cappella work. So we want to test how clearly can you hear these people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll bring in the Choral Society, certain members, about 45 of them, and we'll have the Sacramento Philharmonic Orchestra on stage with us. And we want to hear, what is it like to hear a soloist versus chorus and orchestra?
Very good. Very good. Well, it's so exciting, and we pray that... Well, for a million reasons that COVID goes away, but this will be one of the special reasons to have you folks back.
Absolutely, and when we do come back, it will be a wonderful celebration, and people realize how much they miss each other and the small things that day to day that we're not allowed to do, you know. And so some people have the bank account of hugs they're saving up, you know.
Yes, that's right. Well, Jim, it's so good to hear your voice. Thanks for all you and the Choral Society and Scola there at Sacred Heart and Vox Nova.
We'll be patient and we'll stay in touch.
Very good. Thanks so much. God bless, Jim.
Thanks. Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Jim McCormick from the Scola Cantorum at Sacred Heart, and also Vox Nova there at the choirs at Sacred Heart, and then of course the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra under the direction of the very famous Don Kendrick. We'll take a break, back with more on a Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Deacon Kevin, and thanks for all the great work you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, we're joined by phone by one of my favorite writers, authors, journalists, Lynette Magnino. Lynette, good day to you.
Hello there, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We haven't seen you in person in a long time, but I keep reading your stuff.
Well, that's true. I haven't seen a lot of people in person, but especially you. It's been quite a while, I think. So.
Yes. Well, it's good. It's certainly good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours.
How long have you been writing for the Catholic Herald?
It's been since, my goodness, since 2005. It was a little bit more sporadic back then, but regularly since the beginning of the magazine, which was 2010.
And, you know, it's funny. I was one of those who had grave miscomings about it going from, the newsprint to a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first edition knocked my socks off, and I haven't looked back. It's just really spectacular. I really love it.
Yeah, I think the feedback has always been really positive over the years, so I also like it, and I know that transition from the newspaper style to the magazine was probably greeted tentatively by many, but I think many feel the same as you, that it's been a good move.
Yes, it really has. And the thing I really like about our Catholic Herald is enormous amount of local content. I'm reading about people in our diocese.
Yes, and I think that's what I for sure love about it, because it really gives us the opportunity to, I think, dig a little deeper into these personal stories where people are really sharing things that are very intimate and revealing a little bit about their experiences. And I think that helps others, you know, in their faith journey. So that's definitely something I love about it.
Yeah, you know, it's not just happy news stuff. You know, it's you have to ask some very intimate personal questions frequently.
Very, very, very true. And, you know, it's an honor to be able to be in that position where people will allow you into their personal story and trust you to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do certainly work with everyone that we talk with, and we, you know, collaborate with them and share with them exactly the direction of the story. There would be no surprises for the person.
Right.
But it is definitely something that is, like you said, very personal. We're sharing, you know, details that can be very hard and painful for them. But at the same time, there are those stories that are very joyful. So it's a good mix. And I think that, too, is a part of the equation that makes the Herald work, that there's both the sorrowful times and the difficult work that people are going through, and then also the joyful times.
Well, so much, you know, it really describes our faith. You know, we're helping people get through maybe difficult things, and our faith is one of great hope and joy as well.
Right, and of course, this whole past year, that makes me think of the larger theme for the past year, which may not always be evident to the reader, but in the planning that goes into a year's worth of issues, there's an overarching theme, and this past year was hope, the cardinal virtue of hope, and how we, you know, live that out as Christians. And so every issue tries to kind of tackle that in a different way. And certainly some issues we see a theme that's, you know, repeated year after year because it's important, but we look at it from a different perspective each time.
So did you have a background in journalism before you started writing for the Herald?
Not real. I wouldn't say journalism in terms of news stories. Mm-hmm. It was more general in terms of communications. I worked in corporate communications for a long time, and I was always writing various things for trade publications and collateral materials. And then, of course, a lot of that takes the tone of a feature writing. And so it was a nice transition to be able to do this for the Herald. I very much enjoy it.
You know, this is such a big diocese, number one. Geographically, it's also incredibly diverse in the traditional ways we think of diversity, but in a lot of untraditional ways that diversity shows its face. I think it's hard to put your finger on. There won't be repeatable stories here because we have so many unique stories from the diocese. I look at people in Siskiyou County and Modoc County and people in Sacramento County and Yolo County,
right,
and Shasta County, and they're all different occupations, different places where people have come from, different languages,
right,
that people speak. It's just mind-boggling, the diversity.
Absolutely. I mean, geographically and, you know, heritage-wise, certainly, as you mentioned, there, various, industries that they come from. So there's just all kinds of experiences. And you're right, no story will ever be the same. And it is, it's just, I think, very compelling to be able to approach that and sit down and interview someone, you know, develop questions in advance, and then sit with them and then allow them to kind of take that story in a direction that speaks for them. And, you know, then in terms of once it's complete and before it's submitted, we want to be sure in coordinating with those people that it's representative of the story that they want to tell, so that people really get that heartfelt message that they're conveying. So, you know, you're right. It's just very, very diverse and, just a joy.
You know, it's funny. I was looking at one of your recent stories. What is God asking me to do as a parent? And you were talking with the Acosta family from Blessed Virgin Mary Presentation Parish here in Sacramento. And
right.
here's this photo by Steve German accompanying your story. A beautiful family, mom and dad, and four kids. And I couldn't help but notice the clock in the background said 8:15, and I asked them. I said, "You know, your family is so happy there. I gotta figure it's 8:15 p.m. You know," and they said, "No, it's actually 8:15 a.m.
Yeah, that's true. We kind of have to step into their life when it works, and certainly Steve does that with the photography and. Many times the interviewing takes place in the evening or on lunch breaks or, you know, early in the morning. So it is an interesting thing. I hadn't really paid attention to that clock before, but now it brings up an interesting point.
Of course, it could be one of those clocks where the battery is dead and it's been 8:15 for a long time.
Yeah.
Which is typical in our house.
Yeah, oh my.
So, yeah. Lynette, do you have a favorite story you've written?
Oh, there have been so many. All of them are definitely special in some way. But I will say that that one that stands out for me is from a few years back. Maybe it was only a year or two ago, where I was interviewing a woman who has passed, but she was in hospice care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just about her journey in hospice and how her faith was so important to her. And, you know, she passed maybe 6 or 7 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
But to be invited into her home and to hear her story and her journey and the importance of her faith, it was just amazing. And that was one that really touched my heart in unique ways. But there are so many. I mean, I can say something about every single story that I've had the pleasure to be a part of, and I know that they, going way back, like I said, to 2010 when the magazine first started, there have just been such a string of creative ideas, and of course, all of those ideas are generated, by the editor and the team at the Pastoral Center, and they develop, these ideas and pursue the people who we will interview. And then, as I said, we develop the questions that we might ask. But once you're there, the story can go in a million directions, as you probably know.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So, You know, and that's just an amazing process to be a part of, to see what really unfolds and what they want to share. And like I said in the very beginning, it's just really an honor to be a part of that, and it just is very special.
Is there one or two you remember that were especially difficult, either difficult stories to interview? Sometimes it's not a difficult story to interview, but it's difficult to write for some reason.
Well, you know, I think any of these stories that entail a little bit of heartache,
mm-hmm.
For the person of what they've experienced, definitely I want to approach it with great sensitivity,
right,
and compassion and understanding. And so sometimes you second guess yourself and hope,
yeah,
that you're doing,
yeah,
that. But, you know, there have been stories about people who have experienced abortion or who have been in prison or have been through divorce. So all kinds of things that stir up that heartache again. And that can be very difficult and very challenging to write. But hopefully it tells the story. And I always feel, I don't think this would happen in other publications per se, but I think that I feel comforted myself when we share a story with the interviewee so that they can, you know, basically confirm that, yes, that's representative of what we discussed. And it makes me feel comforted to know that they're okay with it, you know, that we've accomplished that storytelling with sensitivity and with compassion.
Do you, there's kind of a split in some of us really old-time journalists and the younger journalists like yourself. I still use a notebook and a ballpoint pen when I'm interviewing people. I go to press conferences now, and everybody there is sitting there with their hands in their lap, and I'm going, what are they doing? And I'm realizing, well, the whole thing is taped, and the whole thing's going to be posted online, and then they can get whatever quote they want. And I'm sitting there with my notebook, you know, scribbling shorthand, my own shorthand, you know. And then I get home, and I can't even read my notes, you know.
No, I absolutely do take a notebook and pen. I also have my digital recorder with me, which is kind of my backup.
Your backup,
but
I
kind of rely more on what I've, you know, jotted down, what I've written down. And, you know, I feel like in the moment when you're hearing it firsthand, there's so much more that, you know, comes about. So that's definitely my preference, but I do have that digital recorder.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I started in sports, you know, and coaches would talk real fast, and athletes would talk real fast, and athletes frequently would talk in not very good English, just, you know, not because they weren't smart, just because they were speaking almost in cliches and quick answers and that kind of thing. And I know I would write, ask them a question that I wanted an answer to, and when they were answering it, I would write it down. Then I would ask them another question I didn't want the answer to, while I was writing down the answer to the question I did want the answer to. It gave me a little more time to get it all written down. So
yeah, it is kind of and that's why I do rely on that digital recorder sometimes to fill in the holes if I didn't get something down that I had really hoped to. And then, of course, I think so often, you know, these interviews can go on. They can be quite lengthy and, you know, which is also wonderful. There's tremendous content, which my greatest regret or frustration in writing is that, you know, we are limited. We
indeed
have worked out.
Indeed.
And there's always so much to share. And I just, you know, you wish you could write more or have some other, you know, to be continued part two.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Annette, you have a unique style and a very compelling style. And I know when I'm reading it, if I haven't even seen your byline, I say, oh, Lynette wrote this. I know it was Lynette's. So we really appreciate all you do. And thanks so much for joining us today. And hope we get
absolutely
you back when we have a little more time.
Oh, lovely. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to share all this.
Well,
thanks,
Lynette. God bless you and your family. Thanks. Take care.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
That's Lynette Magnino from the Catholic Herald. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, its valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down, walking down.